This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Today's program focuses on ballot issues. Coming up, we'll hear from Citizens Research Council of Michigan President Eric Lufer on some ideas for changing Michigan's initiative process for getting proposed laws and possible constitutional amendments on the ballot. But before we discuss policy, we're going to look at political implications of ballot proposals. For that, we're joined by Western Michigan University political science professor John Clark. Thanks for being here.
Always a pleasure.
So when the petitions were submitted for a citizen-initiated law that would legalize the recreational use of marijuana in Michigan, some Republicans in the legislature said they were willing to consider passing that into law rather than letting it go on the ballot. Now, there's a policy reason for doing that because it's easier to amend the law if the legislature approves it. But there was also some talk of the political implications here about that a proposal to legalize marijuana on the ballot could hurt Republican candidates. Based on what we know about ballot issues and other elections, were Republicans in the legislature right to be concerned about the politics?
Well, there certainly is a possibility that a ballot proposal, any ballot proposal, could affect turnout levels. And turnout levels, of course, matter in elections because it doesn't matter what people in general think. It matters what voters do. And by voters, I mean people who actually show up to vote. In this case, and we'll sort of dig a little deeper in a minute, but in this case, it appears to be an issue that some folks, at least, who otherwise might be less likely to vote, might be interested in. Which means then that if they show up in close races, that could tip the scale. So at the margins, it's at least a possibility. And given the fact that Republicans are in control of the legislature, want to remain in control of the legislature, they have the opportunity to pass legislation that would, you know, sort of make the ballot proposal moot. And as such, that might turn out to be a good thing for them. On the other hand, might not make any difference at all.
And as it turned out, the legislature did not act on it, so it will be on the
ballot
in November.
So it will be on the ballot, yep.
There's, of course, a two-step process there. One is you show up to vote. The other thing is that you actually go ahead and cast your vote on things beyond that ballot issue, which is what, in this case, we're assuming is driving somebody to the polls. Do we know if people then fill out the rest of the ballot, or are there perhaps people who just show up and say, yeah, I want to legalize marijuana, or I want to ban this thing?
Yeah, that's really the important question. And so for folks who are interested in outcomes, and folks who are running campaigns, things like that, that's really, for them, the central issue. Michigan is one of about half the states, I guess, in the country that have the opportunity for citizens to vote directly on public policy issues. There's a lot of variation across states. Relative to some, it's harder to get stuff on the ballot in Michigan than in some other places. It's easier in Michigan than in some other places. What we've seen in the past is that about half of the things that show up on the Michigan ballot for voters to decide end up passing, and about half of them fail. So, again, there's a lot of variation across states, but even within Michigan, the likelihood of passing, there's a substantial amount of variation there as well. But if we look at these kinds of issues, not just in Michigan, but more broadly, there are a couple of examples that people often point to as being, to use a phrase that you used earlier before we were on the air, the gold standard of impact of a ballot proposal on an election outcome. And the one that oftentimes people turn to is the presidential election in 2004, specifically in the state of Ohio. You may remember those folks who are students of ancient history will recall that 14 years ago, the 2004 election pitted George W. Bush, the incumbent, against Democratic nominee John Kerry. It was a close election, not as close as the 2000 election had been, but it was still close. And essentially, the election came down to the results in Ohio. It wasn't super close. It was about 100,000 votes in Ohio, as I recall, but that's still relatively close. And it turns out that in Ohio, there was a same-sex marriage ban that was on the ballot. And after the election, sort of looking back, as political scientists and other observers of politics often do, people said, wow, if that same-sex marriage ban had not been on the ballot, Kerry would have won Ohio. And if he won Ohio, he would have won the Electoral College. We would have had President Kerry instead of a second term of President Bush. That's a lot of speculation. There's a lot of what-ifs there.
Right.
But what made that ballot proposal potentially effective as a vote mobilizer was the fact that it wasn't just something that was on the ballot. It was used as a vehicle particularly in churches, conservative churches, both Protestant and Catholic conservative churches, as a way of mobilizing voters, not just on Election Day, but before that, making sure that church members were registered to vote. And that was organized around sort of existing institutions in society. That probably had as much of an impact on the ultimate outcome as, you know, just sort of the fact that it was there. So it was this mobilization effort changing the shape of the electorate and the composition of the electorate that, if anything, would have had an impact in terms of the actual presidential election outcome. Just putting on the ballot might not make a difference, but using it as a way to change the shape of the electorate, the composition of the electorate, that's where you have the potential in a close race to tip the balance. And it turned out Ohio was close.
And I suppose we could look at that and say that had it been in a different election year, I guess I'm thinking of, say, 2008, when Barack Obama won the presidency pretty comfortably over John McCain, that perhaps a ballot issue on the ballot in Ohio or any other state may not be as influential because the race for president is not as close as what we're talking about in 2004 between President Bush and at that time Senator Kerry.
Yeah. And in this case, too, we're talking about how ballot proposals are getting people to the polls who wouldn't otherwise be there. There are some people that are going to vote in every election no matter what. There are some people that are not going to vote no matter what. But for the rest, that, you know, folks that sometimes vote and sometimes don't vote, or they're thinking about it, and the question is on Election Day, did they show up or not? Those are the ones that really matter. In the case of Ohio in 2004, by activating a set of potential voters that otherwise would not have voted, you help not only pass the ballot proposal, but you also, once those folks get there, they were more likely to vote for George W. Bush than for John Kerry. You also have the potential to tip the balance in the presidential contest as well. If folks are showing up at the polls to support a particular candidate already, then there's not as much impact or potential impact for a ballot proposal or for anything else, for that matter, to ultimately shape the outcome. But it's that block of potential voters and whether they decide to show up or not show up that really makes the difference. And we know some things about those folks, right? We know that older citizens are more likely to vote than younger citizens. Younger citizens maybe show up more in presidential election years. They're less likely to show up in midterm election years like we have in 2018. People that think of themselves as being Republicans or Democrats are more likely to show up because they see a greater stake in the outcome for themselves. If their side wins, that has some meaning to them. So Republicans and Democrats, generally speaking, are more likely to vote than independent or non-aligned voters.
And just to follow up on that for a moment and go back to where we started with legalizing marijuana, that is an issue which polling has shown resonates more with younger voters. So
exactly. This
has the opportunity, perhaps, to bring people out who would otherwise not vote in a non-presidential election year and get them to the polls.
Right. And it turns out both independents and Democrats are more likely to support a proposal like this, or at least generally support the legalization of marijuana. And so if you're getting those people to the polls, that's sort of the first thing. The second thing is who they're going to vote for once they get there, if they vote for other candidates. It's likely that Democrats are going to vote for Democratic candidates, just like it's likely that Republicans are going to vote for Republican candidates. The question then becomes, if you're able to mobilize unaffiliated or independent voters, what do they do with the rest of their ballot?
If anything,
right? So that becomes sort of the secondary challenge, right? First, you get them there, and then you try and persuade them once they get there to vote for candidates on your side. There are a whole lot of reasons to think that in 2018, some of those unaffiliated or independent voters are going to like Democrats better than Republicans. Based on history, when you've got the White House in control of one party in midterm elections, those unaffiliated or independent voters tend to vote for candidates from the other party. That suggests the possibility of a good Democratic year if you can get those folks to show up on Election Day.
So the counter to the link between the ballot proposal and the candidate, 2004, as you just mentioned. The counter to that could be 2006 in Michigan. Democrats had a very good year, including the reelection of Governor Granholm. They did quite well in state legislative races. It was a good year for Democrats nationwide, we should say. But there were some conservative ballot proposals, including one which banned the use of race and gender for hiring by the state or for university admissions. In other words, a ban on affirmative action in some areas that was approved by voters by a pretty large margin. I guess could we look at the question here of whether an election is just one ballot, or whether there perhaps are several separate elections which are being decided as you go down your ballot. There's candidates, there's ballot proposals, et cetera.
Yeah, so I think one of the things that differentiates successful ballot proposals from unsuccessful proposals, there are multiple dimensions, but one is whether or not it taps into some underlying partisan affiliation on the part of voters. And so if it is the case that a proposal seems like it's partisan in nature, that probably works against it in Michigan, because it may mean that folks from one party are very much in support of it, but it probably means that folks from the other party are very much opposed to it if it's defined in that partisan way. And typically it's the case that these independent or unaffiliated voters, they tend to be pretty skeptical about proposals that they view, at least, as being partisan proposals. Whether or not affirmative action really is one of those kinds of proposals, in part, depends on the way it's framed. And in that election context, it may make a difference. That's at least one of the things that could come into play. There are other things that matter as well, and at least for now, with the marijuana proposal, it doesn't appear that it's going to be framed as a partisan issue. But that's one way of sort of changing the nature of the debate, changing the tenor of that discussion in a way that could make it more difficult for a proposal like that to pass. But again, there's a whole lot of what-ifs that are involved in that as well.
Can the causation go the other way? Can you have a ballot proposal which in any given year may struggle to get support? Could be a 50-50 question a lot of years. But because of the dynamics of the rest of the ticket, perhaps the top of the ballot where we always look, president in a presidential election year, but maybe in a year like this, governor and United States senator, can those things influence the rest of the ballot in a way that perhaps an initiative gets across the finish line in one year, where perhaps in another year it wouldn't?
Absolutely. And that gets back to the question that we were talking about before, is who actually shows up to vote? Turnout is so important, and not just the number of voters, but the differential turnout, the types of voters that are choosing to show up relative to those who are choosing not to participate. And so if in a particular election year, you get a wave election in terms of the types of people who are showing up to support a particular candidate or set of candidates, and they vote all the way to the end of the ballot, that could very much have an impact on the outcome of a ballot proposal. If the electorate looks different, if it's got a different composition, then it could be that a close vote would go the other way, absolutely.
Can ballot issues impact each other? If the ballot gets too crowded, do voters perhaps view them more skeptically? If there are perhaps ballot issues which seem to be kind of going in the same direction, might voters look at those and say, these actually do sound like things that I support, even if I haven't looked at them in great depth?
Yeah, and we see that a lot more in other states than Michigan. There are states where it's relatively easy to get things on the ballot, where, voters have dozens of decisions to make on election day just on public policy issues, oftentimes on proposals that seem to be contradictory. Sometimes what happens is people just sort of throw up their hands and say, I'm not going to vote on any of them. Sometimes folks have different decision rules, like I'm going to vote against all of them just because I don't know, and I'd rather be sort of safe than sorry, right? We'll keep the status quo by rejecting these proposals rather than allowing the status quo to change in a way that I might not necessarily like, but I'm not invested enough to know very much about what the outcomes are. In Michigan, we tend to have, relatively fewer proposals. Most years, we don't have more than a couple. Some years, we don't have any. This is a year where we don't know yet, but there could be an awful lot of things on the ballot for people to decide, and at least a couple of them might, be on the same issue, but approaching it from different directions. Generally speaking, I think what we might see under those circumstances is people just not voting all the way to the end of the ballot, or folks just sort of saying, no, 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 maybe yes on this one, no, no, no on the rest of them. In which case, you know, we end up with potentially at least a lot of money spent on proposals, but not much change in terms of public policy outcomes.
Which is kind of what happened in 2012 in Michigan.
Exactly.
Five proposals on the ballot, none of them passed.
And five is not a huge number. Right. And yet it was easy for folks who were opposed to some of them, if not all of them, to say, look, just vote no. You know, here's a lot. This is a lot for you to keep in mind, but just don't worry about the specifics of any one of them. Just vote no on all of them. And then if these things really are important, then the legislature can deal with them later.
There's a lot of dynamics, as we've discussed, which impact election results. Of course, you know, turnout's a big one. Who shows up? How many voters show up and who are they? Are those dynamics in any way differentiated when we talk about candidates and ballot proposals? Does a wave election necessarily for one party or the other mean anything for ballot questions, or are these very separate things?
I think usually they're pretty separate. Now, if we look at, in particular, this legalization of marijuana proposal, there are some things in the data, at least national polling data, that suggests that there certainly is some similarity between the kinds of decisions that voters might make on the proposal and the kinds of decisions that they might make in terms of contests for public office where they're choosing candidates. So that, for instance, the Pew Research Center did a survey earlier in the year, a national survey, not just looking at Michigan. And what they found was that younger citizens are way more likely to support marijuana legalization in general. And as folks get older, they become less likely to support that kind of legalization. We also know that younger voters are more likely, right now at least, to support Democratic candidates if they show up at the polls, and older voters are more likely to support Republican candidates. That doesn't mean that everybody that's past a certain age only votes Republican. It doesn't mean that everybody that's younger than a certain age only votes for Democrats. But generally speaking, we see this pattern across age cohorts. That's the way it looks right now. It doesn't always look that way. What it suggests, though, is that for those voters who actually vote, right, that show up and become voters, there seems to be a connection between their likelihood of supporting Democratic candidates and supporting the legalization of marijuana, at least in the national picture. And that suggests that if Democrats can use the marijuana proposal as a way to get potential voters to the polls, that's likely to help them in terms of candidate races. And if that's the case, then where we started out with all this, the concerns of at least some Republican legislators seem to be sort of reasonable concerns.
And if we go back to, again, that gold standard of 2004, if you're looking for the ballot issue that's going to help your candidates, or if you're looking for keeping that thing off the ballot, which you think might hurt your candidates, is it tough to replicate what 2004 was, which was a very close election nationwide? George W. Bush, if memory serves, got more than 50%, but I don't believe he broke 51 for the popular vote. And a close election, electoral college. And we mentioned Ohio itself was very close, where this one particular same-sex marriage ban was on the ballot. So, in other words, if we're talking a wave election, perhaps a ballot issue doesn't mean as much as opposed to if we're talking what we think is going to be a close election for perhaps a variety of different offices.
That's right. And of course, here in Michigan, we'll have the governor's race and other statewide executive offices and the United States Senate race that are statewide elections. But everything else is within districts. And so some of those seats are not going to be very competitive. Some of them are going to be very competitive. Conceivably, it could be the case that in those competitive state legislative seats, for instance, the presence or absence of a particular proposal might be just enough. If you're talking about, you know, a few hundred voters in a particular place, it's at least conceivable that a proposal could mobilize a few hundred voters that otherwise wouldn't have voted. And if they vote, you know, for offices as well as for the proposal itself, then again, that could have an impact. But it assumes that there's going to be close elections, and it assumes that there's a linkage between the proposal and the choices that voters make when it comes to the candidate part of the ballot as well.
And not inconceivable that there could be a proposal which passes statewide, but perhaps within the confines, especially if we get down to, say, a state house district, which is not very big, that maybe that ballot issue is not popular there. And therefore, perhaps that race goes in a different direction than what we see statewide.
That's right. And there's going to be more than one ballot proposal, right? So it could be that there are several different things that mobilize different subsets of potential voters that have the net effect of kind of canceling each other out, at least at the state level and possibly within districts as well.
All right. I'm sure that we will have much more to talk about in the months ahead. But John Clark, as always, thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
John Clark is a political science professor at Western Michigan University. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.